Hey everybody, welcome in. Got a special edition of the Voices for Freedom, Freedom TV today. So we'll just give everybody some time to get in. This is a bit different because we're not going to be playing a part in this interview. We have a guest interviewer and a guest. So welcome everybody to another Voices for Freedom TV event. This time we have Dr. Emmanuel Garcia with us, who is interviewing Ed Curtin. So Dr. Emmanuel or Manny Garcia received his MD from the University of Pennsylvania in 1986. He is board certified in psychiatry and neurology by the ABPN. He has practiced as a psychoanalyst, psychotherapist, and psychiatrist for over 30 years and is currently working in New Zealand, where he immigrated in 2006. And he's a dual citizen of New Zealand and the United States. So we're very grateful to have you here today, Manny, to this interview. I just want to make a quick comment as well, is that the views expressed today, especially by Dr. Garcia, are his own personal views. They're not the views of any organization or institution. They're put forward for educational purposes and do not constitute medical advice or legal advice.
Well, thank you very much, Claire. And just as we begin, I want to call attention to this the wonderful work that you guys have been doing, Voices for Freedom, you, Ollie, and Libby. It's really been inspiring, and you're reaching a lot of people, and I hope you know that, and it's wonderful. Even though I was told—
Manny, may I make a comment?
Yeah, sure.
I want to second that, and because I've watched a lot of the work there, and the Peter McCullough one was extraordinary. And this is really very important work. So I want to congratulate you for that, Claire.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Ed. Well, it's a massive team effort, as you can tell. So yeah, looking forward to hearing what, really looking interested to hear a different perspective today.
And so let me finish a few things about VFF, which is to say that they did two recent webinars with Roger Hodgkinson and Peter McCullough. They're both really superb, and I recommend people watch them. And I also want to summarize some of Dr. Peter McCullough's comments about this whole viral thing. And this is a summary of what he said recently. It's fabulous. He says, number one, there is no asymptomatic transmission. Number two, early treatment is essential, and there are early treatments that are successful. Number three, these so-called vaccines are not effective versus the Delta variant. Okay, he said this in an interview with Al Johnson. Natural immunity is lifelong immunity. And if you're sick, you protect yourself, you treat people who are vulnerable. He also says masks don't work. And he recommends oral hygiene. The dentist is doing a lot of good work in oral hygiene. So this is another, these are things that Dr. McCullough has said. And I would highly recommend people listening to your interview and also his recent interview with Al Johnson. Now, to go on, and one last thing too. People have asked me about adverse effects of the Pfizer injection and the other injections. You can easily look at those kinds of things if you go to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, Children's Health Defense Fund, America's Frontline Doctors. All right, I'll get that out of the way. Now, it's a pleasure for me to introduce Ed. I've known Ed now for a number of years. He's a wonderful essayist. And today we're going to be focusing on his essay on what I know and what I don't know about COVID. And he's written about many, many topics, and he has an absolutely fascinating background. He's highly erudite. He studied the classics, and he studied politics and the state, and he has a history of being a superb college athlete, and he was a Marine as well, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Ed?
Yes, that's true.
So, Ed, you
filled your blanks. A Marine who became a conscientious objector.
Yeah. So, Ed, tell us a little bit about yourself and fill in the blanks, and then we can get into the COVID stuff.
Okay. I'll be very brief on me. I am a former professor of sociology At one point, I also taught theology. I'm trained in the classics, sociology, theology, philosophy, literature. I've been writing for over 50 years. About all kinds of things, politics, literature, philosophy. I write poetry. I've written a novel. I'm writing another novel now. I have a very varied background. My recent book is a bunch of essays. The title is Seeking Truth in a Country of Lies. That covers many topics from Bob Dylan to JFK assassination to propaganda in general. So that's a little bit about my background. I live in Western Massachusetts in the United States. I have two children. I'm married. My wife's a cookbook author, and That's about it.
And you played point guard. Which team were you playing point guard for when you were in the NCAA?
I played for a college called Iona College, which is a Division I school north of New York City. I went to that school because I had a basketball scholarship, and they played a lot of games in Madison Square Garden. Probably a mistake. I could have gone to other big name universities. But from the high school I came out of, which was the same high school as Anthony Fauci, which is appropriate to our conversation here, a Jesuit high school in New York City called Regis High School. No one else had really gone on in basketball like I did. And so I was a kid obsessed with basketball, and that's what I did.
Wonderful. And speaking of which, I guess with you and Fauci coming out of the same high school, you might say we have the Archangel Ed against Lucifer here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we have a battle. Yeah.
It's a battle of good and evil, and I'm going to get to that too as we talk about this. But I'm going to open this up by quoting from this beautiful paper you wrote, this brief essay, What I Know, What I Don't Know About COVID. And I'm going to quote your first point. It's so important. It says, I know that vast numbers of people have been hypnotized by fear, threats, and bribes to accept the corporate mainstream media's version of COVID-19. I have concluded that many millions are moving in a trance state and do not know this. They have been induced into this state by a well-organized, very sophisticated propaganda campaign that has drawn on the human fear of death and disease. Those behind this have no doubt studied the high incidence of hypochondriasis in the general population and the fear of an invisible virus in societies where belief in God and the spiritual invisible has been replaced by faith in science. Knowing your audience well, they have concocted a campaign of fear and confusion to induce obedience. Well, Ed, that's a beautiful statement, and I think you've summarized so much of this eloquently. And as you know, people who oppose this mainstream mainstream narrative have been subject to a lot of persecution. The medical council here has gone after doctors who have dared to oppose the narrative, who have spoken out. They've gone after a doctor recently who said he couldn't in good conscience recommend the injection to a pregnant woman. It's absolutely insane. But perhaps you can elaborate a little more on this statement, and we can talk about how you and I followed this very closely from the very beginning, and were able to smell a rat. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, that's true, Manny, that we were in close contact from the start, and we did smell a rat. And it seemed obvious to us, I think, because we have a little history behind us, and because we've been attuned to things that have been going on for decades. And to, for me to say, I think people are today in a trance or hypnotized has a whole history. And the history goes back many, many decades, and it goes back to the essence of propaganda. So the whole COVID propaganda story is embedded within a larger historical story. And that is embedded within a larger historical myth, a myth of progress, a myth of the belief or the faith in science and progress. And I think that what's happening now, to really understand it, you have to understand that it's been a slow process, a drip by drip by drip process of propaganda that has conditioned people. As the great French sociologist Jacques Ellul wrote long ago, you have to condition people. Propaganda doesn't happen all at once. It happens slowly. And there are two stages to it. One, the conditioning process, in which you create this background assumptions that people buy into, these myths. And then once you've done that, they're conditioned for decades now. And one of the things that people have been conditioned into believing is that we are totally materialistic beings, that there is no transcendent human spirit. You don't have to call it God if you want. I do, but you don't have to. Something deeply embedded into the human race, but that we have no freedom, that we're all following a conditioned program of materialistic determinism. And this has been going on for decades and decades. And with the COVID story, it's just jumped right out into the air. It's just all out there now. And people, many, many people are tragically afraid of death, because it's been repressed in our cultures for decades. And they're hypochondriacal as well. And so the propagandists know all of this. They know more than I do, more than you do, more than Claire does. They hire these people, psychoanalysts, sociologists, theologians, and they work on all this stuff. And they know exactly what they're doing. And this is, they've brought us to this point where so many people just live in fear and they are totally hypnotized in a trance state. And this is what we need to break through. And this is what, you know, we're trying to do here, to break through, which is an enormous task.
Well, you know, it is an enormous task. You know, there's a very famous quote that Freud, of Freud's, who said, the voice of reason is a soft one, but it will eventually gain a hearing. And I'm regarding that as very optimistic, honestly. And I wonder what it does take to break through. And from my side, I'm encouraged by the fact that people on the ground have come up to me individually and talked about the good work that VFF is doing, about standing up for these kinds of things. And I think there are a lot more people out there, but the fear is immense and the peer pressure is absolutely immense. The peer pressure is incredible. And now it's combined with this, what I see, and you see it as a global campaign. I've never seen, as bad as the other stuff has been, has there ever been anything so globally coordinated that you can remember and you can compare this to?
No, never in my lifetime. And, you know, I'm in my 70s, mid-70s, and so I've been around a long time. And I started studying this stuff and being aware back in the 1960s. And I've taught courses on propaganda. I've written about this stuff for decades. And most of my focus over those years was on U.S. foreign policy, the war against Vietnam to begin with, and then through all the other wars and through the economic oppression of regular people by the elites and so forth. But this is in a category all its own.
Yeah.
This is worldwide, coordinated. And it is a battle, really, I think, for the soul of the world. And it's coordinated. It's coordinated across the countries. So in New Zealand and Australia and Germany and the USA and Great Britain and so on and so forth, you hear the same story. You have the same people working on the same agenda. And they're in cahoots.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And have you heard recently in Australia, they're building a quarantine facility. And if you watch some of the videos of the response to people, I mean, it's absolutely insane. And I'll give you an example here. We are in lockdown right now in the whole country still. Is that correct, Claire? The whole country's in lockdown still, level 4, very stringent lockdown.
Okay.
Based initially on the discovery of one so-called case, and a case is defined as someone who tests positive by this faulty, phony, polymerase chain reaction test. They put the whole country in lockdown. Now, there's no, to my mind, I don't understand any sense of any of this at all, except for control. And I have to be clear, this is about control. It's not about, this has nothing to do with health, locking people down, and again, I want to get back to these issues. One of the first things that caught my attention as you and I were following this, and we were in a group of very smart people. We had an email group, Claire, and other people, of a very, very broad international group of smart people talking about the things they had talked about. And I couldn't believe how many of those people bought this thing, hook, line, and sinker. They bought, and you were amazed by it as well, Ed. I mean, really, we couldn't really believe our own eyes and ears that so many smart people, highly educated people, could fall into this based on this fear campaign. But one of the things that really got me really, really concerned was in all of this, and I've said this again, where was the push for early treatment, for a cure, a remedy, something? It was absent. It's absent now here in New Zealand. We hear nothing about treating people. And according to Dr. McCullough and many others, it's eminently treatable. So go ahead, Ed, you tell us a little more about the experience in the States.
Well, it's very similar to there in New Zealand. There was no emphasis at all on early treatment, which was a great giveaway. There was no emphasis on preventive medicine at all, whether it was vitamin D or hydrochloroxine and so forth. There was none right from the start. The emphasis was about how bad it all was and how we're going to need a vaccine. And then when the vaccines, so-called vaccines,
right,
after all of the fake data that was put out based on the PCR test, which Carrie Mullis, the inventor of the test, said time and time and time again, it's very easily accessible on the internet. It's not going to measure anything, or it could measure everything.
Everything.
But it's not going to tell you anything significant. And yet they base this test on, and all of their cases and their data, which are totally distorted propaganda, on the PCR test. And this was based on the so-called study done by a guy named Christian, I think his name was Drosten.
Drosten, a German guy.
In January 20-something of 2020, which became the template for all of this testing. And the essence of this PCR test, the template that he put forth was it should be done at 45 cycles, which is another matter that makes it totally meaningless. I won't go into all of the intricacies of the so-called test, but the test is bogus. The data are bogus. The whole damn thing is bogus. It was bogus from the start.
And I have to agree with you there. That's what people, I know many people in this audience have to realize. It's a hard awakening, but virtually everything from the start was tainted by false statistics, false numbers, crazy approaches to medicine that were never seen in my lifetime before. And I want to say too, Ed, as you say in your paper, quite, Ed's a scholar. And as scholars are sessional people generally in their scholarship. And Ed has read, as you say, you've read about every, you've consulted researchers around the world, you've gone to the websites of all the major organizations, the CDC, the World Health Organization, the NGOs, et cetera, et cetera. You've left no stone unturned. And your list of conclusions, this beautiful list of conclusions, tells us and asks these questions for us. For example, I have a question of viral isolation. Has a specific virus actually been isolated? And I'll preface by saying, remember Drosten came up with this test in like record time. He had this ready in January of last year. Like, wow, that was quick, right? So that's, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts are even now, so what is it, a year and a half or more since January of 2020, a little bit more than a year and a half, I still have not seen any conclusive evidence that the virus has been isolated. I'm not saying it hasn't been, but I have looked and searched and studied, and I still have not been able to say it's been isolated. But of course, Drosten and the people who pushed this, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, all of these people were pushing this right from the start. Fauci, of course, who is just, he's a mouthpiece for these people.
Yeah.
They were pushing it from the start. There is this virus, blah, 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 blah. Well, I still don't know. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. So sometimes you can say, I don't know. Quien sabe in Spanish, you don't know.
Quien sabe, who knows?
But yeah, who knows, who knows?
And then?
That's where I'm at this point in time. So I question it. I question it. But I can't give you a definitive answer whether it's been isolated or not. Some people say yes, but I think some very reputable journalists and investigators say no. No, like John Rappaport, who is, I don't know if you're familiar with his name. He's an American investigative reporter who's been reporting on medical issues for 35 years. He says it has never been isolated.
Well, then as an ancillary part to that question too, I don't know what happened to the flu. I mean, the flu seems to have disappeared for the past 16, 18 months. Where did it go? All of a sudden, nobody had the flu. Nobody was dying for the flu, which kills people every year. Where did it go? I mean, this is the kind of thing people have to question, have to think about. And then if the flu kills so many people every year, are we going to now have to lock down and socially distance and wear masks, useless masks when the flu arrives? I mean, come on. And how can we get through to people generally to ask them to question about these things? What are your ideas about this?
Well, as I wrote in that piece, the flu disappeared. And, a few years ago in the USA, I can't remember which year, a couple of years back, the flu killed 66,000 or something. Citizens of the United States. But this past year, they killed almost no one. So where did it go? Well, obviously, it's part of the propaganda that it disappeared. And the interesting thing, another interesting thing is that if you look at the tables, when Biden took office in January of this year, the number of cases within the first week in office went downhill so fast, which was very obviously a bit of hocus pocus propaganda. This was in between January 1st, January 20th, and perhaps the 26th, 27th. And all of a sudden, the cases dropped dramatically, as if Biden was some kind of miracle worker. He had something to do with it. He had nothing to do with anything. They just manipulated the figures, which is what they do all the time.
But let me go to a slightly different point, Ed, which is that
So
the argument that the mainstream puts forward about why the flu disappeared is because we've been locked down and masking and distancing and all that, and that is absolute baloney. Okay, so they have an answer. Anytime you're up against an entity that has an answer for everything, you know that you're up against BS. Okay, they've got an answer for everything. Yeah. There are no contraindications to these so-called vaccinations. You know, nothing. I mean, there's nothing. You can be dead. You can be half dead, but it's still good for you. It's safer than water without fluoride. I mean, what kind of a world has this become? It's absolutely, absolutely astonishing, you know? And let me go back up to this other thing too. One of the other points here in your work. I would like to ask, and I think this is an obvious question, who has benefited the most from this so-called pandemic?
Well, the answer is obvious. It is the super rich. It's the international corporations. It's the pharmaceutical companies. It's what the sociologist C. Wright Mills called 50, 60 years ago, the power elite. It goes under multiple names, the power elite, the 1%, the people who run the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, the billionaires. These are the people who have profited, and the lockdowns has really destroyed the lives of hundreds and hundreds of millions of people across the globe, hundreds of millions. I mean, it's just been devastating, mentally, economically, suicides, abuse, spousal abuse, abuse of people in relationships, depression. You're a psychiatrist, you know this. Everyone that I encounter, everyone is depressed.
Yeah.
Now, for years, I've been writing about pharmaceutical drugs and depression, as the drug being part of this propaganda campaign to tell people it's all physiological and blah blah blah, and it's not sociological. It's not the structure. It's not the system. It's not the propaganda. It's not the power elite. It's all in your head. You're just like a messed up mess. Well, that's bullshit. It's pure and simple nonsense. I agree with you. I mean, it's a power grab, and it's working, except for the people who I hope are watching this, you and I and Claire and a minority of people across the world who are fighting against this, and we know what it's about. It's a power grab by these powerful forces. And they want to create a new world order. They want to create, what is the phrase they use? I can't remember.
The Great Reset?
The Great Reset and all that crap. It's obvious that they want to combine technology or artificial intelligence with cyborgs and biology. They want to make us into cyborgs, into machines. They want to deny our natural humanity, our sexuality, our passions, our emotions. They want to just make us into machines. And there are a lot of people who are saying, no way, it's not going to happen. I'm not a machine. Screw you. We're fighting. We're fighting. This is our lives.
You are one of them. You're a champion in what you've written. You've written relentlessly and tirelessly about this. Now, I will say, too, I'm going to ask you in a second to talk about any poignant experiences you've had in your neck of the woods and face-to-face with the consequences of this. Before I do so, I want to point out again another obvious thing. These fear tactics, this oppression, masking children in schools, it's teaching us that we're dangerous to each other, we're to be feared, we should stay apart, we shouldn't do what human beings, what gives joy to human beings, which is to be together, to love each other, to engage constructively in beautiful social activities. And they're telling us, no, you're dangerous, you're lethal, stay away, stay isolated. And my God, what a terrible message, especially for children. It's frightening. But let me segue from that into, maybe you can tell us some of the poignant or difficult experiences you've had as a consequence of these measures in Massachusetts.
Well, the most difficult situations I faced are with my large extended family. And most of them think that I am insane. And that's very painful.
Yeah.
That's been very painful and very difficult. But I persist. And I keep on trying to reach them in ways that they won't just immediately reject. And I have a few grandchildren, and their safety is so important to me because I love them so deeply, and they're such wonderful and just brilliant children, and we're very close. But other than that, I had an encounter once. I was at a, I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's not particularly profound. I was at the local farmer's market. I think it was last summer when they opened it up a little bit. You know how they play these games. We're going to open it up, then we're going to close it down. And we're going to just, jerk you around. So they were jerking us around, and they allowed the farmer's market to open. So I was down there getting some blueberries, and I was standing in line, and a woman turned to me and said, "Get out 6 feet from me." And I said, "Well, I think I'm like 5 feet, 3 inches. Is that okay?" And she looked at me and said, "You're not 6 feet from me. And don't get too close." And I said to her, "Well, lady, do you think I'm crazy? I'd want to get close to you." And that's about as profound as it gets for me. It was a joke, of course. She didn't get it. And I had a chuckle to myself. But everywhere I go, I live in a very, very liberal, liberal in quotation marks, democratic town and area, overwhelmingly so. And almost all of them buy the story. They buy it. And now they got the masks back on. I went into the local library today, and I thought this mask stuff was over. And I walked in, and I'm looking at the books on the shelf. And the librarian runs over to me with a mask. And she says, "Oh, the policy is you have to have a mask on." I said, "Okay, I'm leaving." So you know, that's basically my experience. It's pretty sad. Well, I feel very isolated. Let me put it that way.
And that's why we have to have these kinds of meetings, because we are, a lot of us feel isolated. I can tell you some experiences from my life as well. I've received some incredible hate emails from people I thought were friends of mine. I mean, with language you wouldn't believe. I've never heard these people use this language before, excoriating me, telling me, I don't want to repeat what they told me. And I've lost several, I thought, very close and good friends. Well, maybe that's a test of friendship here. We can't tolerate any difference, okay? We can't tolerate difference of opinion. And I also have struggled with people whom I know and respect who are jumping to get to follow this narrative, to get the jab, to whatever, and they feel proud about it. And it kills me. Not to mention the people, as I'm walking on the sidewalk, who jump 15 feet out of my way into the street just to avoid me as I'm walking down casually, although it's happening a little less now. But that's the kind of thing that it's like a little knife in your back, you know? I hate it. I really got to say I hate it, okay?
Yes.
So yes, I'm gonna finish up with that, with this. You made this comment at the very end, okay?
I just interject?
Sure.
For years, since I was a young man and started writing and teaching, I've been generally accused of being a left wing communist sympathizer, and so on and so forth, opposing the Vietnam War, opposing the U.S. policies in Indonesia, and so on and so forth. And now I'm being accused of being a right-wing nutcase, because so many people on the left, liberals, have swallowed this propaganda. I mean, it's widespread. It is widespread.
Yeah.
They have swallowed it completely. And it's so depressing to see that. And I just shake my head, because when I say, hey, the left and the right, those categories, forget it. It doesn't matter. Those are not the categories. You don't understand propaganda. It transcends left and right. In the US, Republican and Democrat. It transcends New Zealand politics, left and right. British politics, left and right. That's not the issue. It's much bigger than that. Exactly. Try to understand it, but.
No, that's beautifully put. You're exactly right, Ed. And I'm gonna quote your very end, the end of your article, which is beautiful, which says, we are in a spiritual war for the soul of the world. And, you know, some people may say, oh, that's a little grandiose, that's an exaggeration. And I've got to tell you, Ed, I do not think that's an exaggeration at all. I think that is the exact truth. I've said this myself. We are in a battle. This is good versus evil. They are trying, whoever this is trying to destroy the human spirit. And I'm not going to let them do it to me, and I hope other people rise up and say the same. Now, I got an email the other day from someone, an emergency room nurse who loves her job, and she's been told she's got to get the vax or she's going to be redeployed or lose her job or whatever. And she appealed to me, and I'm trying to help her out in some ways. But these are the pressures now coming down on people here, everybody here, okay? And this vax, non-vax thing, this is very reminiscent of this, you know, the yellow star. Okay, this is craziness. How can people not building quarantine facilities, separating people in the vax versus the unvax? Come on, we don't have any parallels here.
Yeah, no, that's very true, and that's why most of your viewers cannot see the little picture that is hanging to my left, as I look at my ugly visage here. It's a picture of a boxer And we need to put on the gloves, and we need to fight, and we need to not take it. We need to say no, no.
That's right.
No, we're simply not going to allow this. This is not, you know, we're not going to be given the yellow star. We're not going to be discriminated against. We are fighting. We may lose, we may win, but we're fighting. And we're in the ring, and this is the important thing. And they want us. They want us. They've been working on this for decades. Don't remember. They want to tell us you're not free. You have no free will. You are determined by social forces, by biological forces, by psychological forces. And I say to that bullshit, that is garbage. That's a lie. And I could, you know, without going into a long argument about it, I could make the case why it is a lie. But the great writers of history, the poets, the novelists, the playwrights, they've told us it's a lie. And we have to listen to them, not to these pseudoscientist power hungry people.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. Thank you very much. That's a beautiful statement. You've been fighting this fight, the good fight, for many, many years. Why don't we kind of end our discussion here, unless you have any questions for me, and then Claire can give you a few questions she's gotten from the chat and the people who've attended the webinar.
Yes, let me just say this before Claire, you speak. I'm sorry to use language that your audience may not appreciate, but I could be much worse than that. And I think that one of the things they don't want us to do is to be emotional, because emotions are somehow irrational, but they're not.
Thank you, Ed. Beautifully said.
Thanks, Ed.
Yeah, that was really beautiful to hear you both speaking and with such intensity, because I think that's what people need to realize and wake up. And we know we heard from Roger Hodgkinson, and that was quite confronting to hear him. And then with Peter McCullough, just, you know, everyone's got their style, but I think we need to speak up. We need to don't hold back now. To sharing what you really feel with people. There's ways to do it, of course, and I do probably, like, my son has learned a fair amount of swear words, which is not the best because of this past year. So he wouldn't be offended by what he's just heard yet. But I probably need to work on that. And I know there was a lot of empathy with you for your situation, especially with the family and people thinking that you're insane. I think we probably all can put our hands up and say that. I might just read also the bit about the left and the right wing, and how I think that does people get very caught up in that, and it's just not that at all. Like you said, it transcends all of that. Phil had a good point. He was just, and I need to, you know, look further into it, but he was thinking in respect of the isolation issue. It seems to be a lot to do with how you actually define what you mean by that, and whether it's the viral isolation issue or the sequencing. So something for people to look further into. I think what we've always said here is that it almost is irrelevant now what's happened there, right? It's the response is out of proportion to anything that may or may not exist. Even in your worst imaginings of what this could be, if you agree with the numbers of deaths that have been put out there, it's nothing justifies what's happening. Is that how you see it and have concentrated?
Oh, yes, definitely. I agree with that totally. Yeah, there are a lot of things that can distract us from the essential issues, what are going on now. And, you know, what is the origin of this virus, if the virus exists, and has it been isolated and all that kind of stuff. I think we could really put all of that aside at this point. because it's quite obvious what's going on, and that's where our focus should be. A lot of this is just distraction. It's distraction. So try to focus on the fundamental things here.
Yeah, I think a lot of people talking about their families and the families is a big issue. I think that's where what we've tried to do with Voices of Freedom. I don't know if you've got anything like that where you are, Ed, but a local group. Do you have people that you can go and meet with or speak with? Because the way we see it is it has to be local, and so for your own well-being and health to connect in locally with people?
I don't really have many local people that I can meet with because I'm very isolated here in many ways in this little town. But I do have I have a former student who's now 40 years old and who I'm close to. And we can talk about this openly. I recently was contacted by a professor at a very prestigious university in the Northeast here. And we've become good friends, and he is on the same page with me and you and his friends that he introduced me to. So we can meet, and he's an international scholar and a very brilliant person. And I do have many people that I know internationally that I communicate with all over the world who I'm in agreement with, but they're not people I can sit down and have a glass of wine, a coffee, speak to in person. So that's hard. I find it difficult.
So I guess that's where you've turned more online, to your online community. But however we do it, it's just, I think that's a fundamental part of getting through this, is having someone to connect with. And a lot of people, and I know we have talked here about the problem, because we've actually had thousands of people join Voices for Freedom, and we had over 1,000 today registering, is they're new to these issues. And we want to be able to talk through those, but then looking for the solutions. I guess our approach has been here at Voices for Freedom is to go local, to speak with people. We see that there's more merit, more to be gained by speaking out 5 times a day to 5 people you connect with in the supermarket or down the street than right now participating in an event where it's easy to be scapegoated and seen as those are those crazy, insane people holding the signs and blaring on the loudspeakers. So it's not to say that there's not a time and a place for that, but I guess that's what we're trying to do, is encourage people to speak up in their circle, whether that's an email or a phone call to your family or to friends. What do you see, both of you, I guess, that question? How are you, what actions are you seeing as being the most fruitful right now?
Well, Manny, you speak first.
Yeah, let me speak first to this. I believe that quotation from Freud is appropriate. You know, the voice of reason is soft, but it eventually gains the victory in the end, basically. However, we are in a situation that I think is pretty unprecedented. And depending on how hard they come down, I mean, if they're going to start coming down so you can't have a job, you can't go to a cafe, you can't do this, if you're not jabbed, we're sort of in a race right now. We've got to make a decision to stand our ground on there's a line that cannot be crossed. And this gets to the very root of the discussion of freedom. These freedoms we have, the government doesn't give us these freedoms. We are born with these freedoms. That's the big difference. These are unalienable, whether you're American or not. The governments have nothing to do with that. They try to encroach in the press and do all that. We have freedom and free choice, okay? You can't tell me you can come to me and put something in my body I don't want you to put into my body. That's my choice, right? And I think we have to be very clear about what we are going to take and not take. And they're pushing it. They're pushing it fast. They keep pushing this. Everybody's got to get vax. They got to win a race, okay? I think we have to stand up for what we believe in. If you want to get a jab, it's up to you. It's your choice. You volunteer for it. Go to town. But me, I'm not going to go near any of these things, all right? And they should not also encroach on my freedoms to move, to eat, to do all kinds of other things, as they're doing now in this ridiculous, oppressive lockdown.
But in saying that, I know you would have found that there's little things you can do. Not sure if I can really say that all the, but just taking action, like, you know, if you see that certain things, I don't know, I see a poster up in my
don't go there.
No, for me.
Don't go there. Don't even go there in a public forum.
Oh.
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
I'm just saying, look, I do little acts of resistance all the time. And I feel, you know, that's me. That's who I am. And I'm, because that's what I feel is the appropriate thing to do. So I think each one of you, just think about your daily life. Like I'm just saying, Manny, it's good to think that we are going to resist, you know, what you've just said. It makes me feel good to hear you say it, but what are we actually going to do? And when I've heard you speaking, it's about, you know, you'll be down the street, you catch up with the pharmacist and they let you know something that invigorates you, that lets you know, hey, I did see you on the webinar. I agree with you, right? Those little things. If nobody says it, you won't know it.
That's true. But so, Claire, let me say one more thing, Claire, if I may interject, I'm sorry. But, you know, are we going to be living in a lockdown in, out, level 1 through 2, 3, 4 forever? How long is this going to go on for? And how long will people accept this? Are we going to become China, basically, you know? And that's going to have to come to some point. I don't know when that is, but I don't want to live in a world like that.
And what do you see, Ed? Obviously, you've had the time with opposing the conscientious objection with Vietnam, having actually been a Marine yourself. So what sort of things helped then, and how do you see that perhaps today being relevant, if at all?
Well, from my perspective, so much of this is all tied together. And one of the things I think about a lot, is that there are commentators out there who make comments regularly about things that just pop up in the news, like let's just say the recent events in Afghanistan. but they know nothing about the history of Afghanistan or the U.S., to name just the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. And so I see one of the, I'm really perplexed, I must say, whether or not to try to tell people, look, there's a history here, and what's going on now goes back a long time. And you have to understand the context, the propaganda that's been building for decades and decades and decades. What I started to talk about right at the beginning of our conversation about the slow drip by drip propaganda that's been going on for so long. And then I think, well, no one wants to hear all that. No one wants to hear all that. So like, how do I communicate? I agree that I think what you said, Claire, little things are important. I really can't get through to people that I know anymore. This is the truth. They don't want to hear it. And so I feel like as we talk here across the world, from New Zealand to Western Massachusetts, I feel a connection to you, to Manny, to the listeners, to people in New Zealand. I feel this human, it's just like a beautiful feeling that I get just talking here. And But other than that, I don't know except to write what I write and speak what I speak. I don't know what else to do. That's the truth. I just don't know.
Yeah, well, I can say one thing. I think it's pretty clear, it should be clear to everybody listening in, that the mainstream media outlets are totally corrupt, they're totally propaganda. And I don't listen or watch any of them, period. It's complete falsehood. And I see so many people glued to that screen still, with big screens, the high definition screens that are as big as my front window. And as long as they're gonna be tuned into that crap, it's gonna be tough. So maybe one recommendation is shut them out. We really are the news. We're real, we're human.
Yeah, we have to talk as real people and express exactly what we feel in our hearts, in our minds, in our daily lives. Don't hold back. I'm trying to do that here. I'm trying to say, you know, I feel a lot of pain day by day, and I know a hell of a lot, but I don't know what good it's doing. And so I'll continue to write. And some days I say, well, why bother? And the next day I say, there's Gene Tunney. See his picture over there? I'm putting on the gloves. And so I go back and forth, but I never give up. That is my motto. Never give up.
Ed, as Rocky Marciano said, keep punching, okay?
You're a hero.
And Ed, you are doing incredible work. And I only realized when I went today to look at your blog, which everybody must go and read. We can send it out to everyone because we get your emails. I actually didn't realize that was you, and I posted that on my Facebook, and over 100 people I remember loved it and commented. And so, you know, that's all those people that you've touched through New Zealand already just with that one post. So I think the writing is very important, and it does have a huge impact. So all over here, and you'll have some friends when this crazy situation ends. Maybe come and visit Manny, and we can all.
Oh, I definitely want to. By the way, it on my blog, I just want to say this: the commentators, it's edwardcurtin.com, are some of the most extraordinary people. Just go there and read the commentaries. Their work's better than mine. It's so heart-rending and uplifting to know that these people are out there dialoguing, and they're extraordinary. And it's really, I say to myself every day, that's one blog, one website where the commentators are just off the charts. They're just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
That's amazing. So you've created your own community there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, did you have that was fine, Manny? I think you guys, it's been a great chat. We're going to try and arrange some more of these, and really appreciative of both of you for coming on. Did you have some final words, either of you?
Well, my final words are, Ed, really, I admire you so much. I want to thank you for lending your time and your strong voice to the cause of truth. We need this. We all need it. We keep doing it. And I want to thank you, Claire, and Ollie and Libby, and all the other people who've tuned in to the webinar, and members of Voices for Freedom, for the work we're doing. We've got to continue to do the right thing. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to do anyway. Thank you.
And I would say the same to you, Claire, and to Manny. And I would say this for those who don't know a lot about Dr. Garcia. This is a guy who is extraordinary in hundreds of ways, a poet, a playwright, an actor, a psychoanalyst, a writer, a courageous human being. He's a Renaissance man. And New Zealand is damn lucky to have him there. And I'm really proud to know he's my friend.
You make me cry, Ed. Jeez.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed. And thank you for coming on, both of you. It was really good.
Thank you, Claire.
And we'll make sure we send out the link so everybody can get them and follow up on both with both Dr. Manny and with Ed. So thank you very much all. We are just a quick note for tomorrow. We have Dr. Peter Canaday coming on with an update. So for those of you that are more interested in asking things about shedding, the patents, graphene oxide, questions like that, that will be more of a medical discussion. Today was something different. And if you are interested in joining Voices for Freedom, just be sure to go to the main page is easiest, voicesforfreedom.co.nz. And there you can get in and take action, local group. And we're doing, we'll be connecting a new lot of people this week. So that'll be great to meet more of you. I know in the comments, a lot of people waiting. So thanks very much, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.